Refugees in our backyard. Over the past decade, more than 5,000 refugees have resettled in Boise. Now it's not unusual to see African women in colorful traditional dress chatting at a bus stop, a family from war-torn Afghanistan picnicking at Ann Morrison Park, a young Iraqi man working at a car wash, Burmese parents waiting for their children outside an elementary school, or Nepalese women, originally from Bhutan, displaying beautiful woven handicrafts at the downtown Saturday market. This morning, three guests from the Boise Office of the International Rescue Committee, or IRC, will tell us about their work resettling refugees and how Boise's faith communities and individual volunteers have helped refugees adjust to new circumstances with dignity and resilience. Our guests are Rabio Manzo, who is the Immigration Services Supervisor at IRC, Danelle Jones, the Housing Coordinator, and Shannon Davis Jones, Volunteer Services Coordinator. And we will begin with Rabio.
Thank you. As Mike said, my name is Rabiu, and I'm the Immigration Service Supervisor for the International Rescue Committee. I started working at the IRC in 2006 when they first opened the office. So before, let's start of the overview, a brief overview of IRC. The mission of the IRC is to provide emergency relief, rehabilitation, protection of human rights, post-conflict development. All these services we provide them internationally. And here in the U.S., we provide refugee resettlement services, as well as advocacy that IRC does in Washington, D.C. The IRC was founded in 1933 and has been helping refugees and others affected by conflict and oppression for 75 years. We began our activities at the request of Albert Einstein, the famous German physicist. Our early mission was to rescue Europeans, academics, scientists, and artists. We were being targeted by the Nazis regardless of their religion. But we stayed to help thousands of refugees escape as World War II continued for several more years. Since that time, we have provided help to thousands, tens of millions of refugees and victims of persecution from nearly every violent conflict that has occurred around the world. Every year, the IRC restores hope and opportunity for millions of conflict-affected people. So, as an immigration specialist at the IRC, 2 weeks ago, I received a client who wanted some services from us. So it was 2 weeks ago, right before July 4th. I received a visit from Yusuf, a Somalian refugee. Yusuf was visiting me about getting his citizenship As you know, refugees, when they come with I-94. A year later, they have to adjust their status to a green card. And 5 years after the arrival date in the United States, they will have to adjust to become a U.S. citizen. So he was inquiring about some information on how to get it. He was sitting in his wheelchair, talking animatedly and wanting to show off his car. Yusuf is a paraplegic, and I remember well when he arrived 4 years ago. Much effort went into getting him the right apartment, wheelchair, doctors, and personal care aides, and so on. At that time, I was his case manager. He spoke no English at the time and was understandably quiet, dependent upon the agency and the Somali community to help meet his needs. He was told before his arrival in the U.S. that door would open to you when you come to the U.S. So as a service we provide to our client, the first day when they arrive, maybe 24 hours later, depending on the time, we take them to the bank and we give them some money, a check. And usually if they want to call their parents left behind, they can do so. And so when he went to the bank to cash his first check, his helper pushed the automatic door opener, and lo and behold, the doors open for him. And he said, "That are right. I was told that the door will open to me." And they did. The IRC soon obtained a motorized wheelchair for him. And when he got it, he rode the 1.5 miles from his home to the office to show it off. He was so proud. So he can ride that car by pushing the button all the way from his apartment to the office. Flash forward a few years, and now he's starting on obtaining his citizenship. His English level is very high, and he has his own car. He said over and over, "Now I'm independent. I don't need help from anyone." And he demonstrated, took us outside, demonstrated his car, hand controls, an ingenious device that picks up his wheelchair and stow it on the top of the car in the carrier. His life is good now and will be even better because he's looking forward to the arrival of his wife and 4 children within the next few months. So Yusuf's story, it's a testament to his dedication, commitment, as well as the Boise community came together to help him in so many ways, and he's so very grateful. His big smile, his independence, and his gratitude make us realize every day why we do what we do here at the Boise IRC. Thank you.
Hello. Albert Einstein said, 100 times every day, I remind myself that my inner and outer life depends on the labors of other men, living and dead, and that I must exert myself in order to give back in the measure I have received and am still receiving. I have been asked to share with you today some personal stories of families and what they are doing as they serve those families who are here to Boise through the Refugee Resettlement Program. In my home, we have 4 children, 3 teens and 1 tween. And if you're not familiar with parenting term, that's an 11-year-old. My husband and I have a fun tradition of having them give us their highs and their lows when we eat dinner together at night. Sometimes we optimistically try to do that a couple times a week. And we found that this is actually the best way to get to know our children and their experiences that they're having out in the world. Oftentimes, it's not so much what they share as how they share it. In the spirit of this tradition, I would like to share with you a few highs and lows of 3 volunteer mentors who've been working with families here in the Boise Valley. My prayer inside my heart is that I share these stories with you, that you will be able to feel the love and the care that both the volunteer and the family are having through this experience, and show you this has really been a benefit to both. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "It is one of the most beautiful compensations of this life that no man can sincerely try to help another without helping himself." About 1.5 years ago, one of my dearest friends was looking for a way to give back to this community, a way to reach out and to lift others. She had a friend who was suffering from some serious health conditions. While they weren't debilitating, they were serious, and she felt a call within her inner spirit to reach out to others, and that would be a way to heal her own spirit. Together, these 2 friends have gotten to have the great experience of working alongside a mother and a father who have 7 children. And help them to get acclimated to life here in Boise. While I'm sure that having a friend who's native here to Boise does not do as much as we would like to make the sting or the burden of being new to such a different place go away, I know that that family has expressed their extreme love and their appreciation to these 2 dear friends that they have made. I appreciate the way that they went out of their comfort zone and enjoyed to get to know this family and enjoyed the process of learning how to help them, while at the same time not doing for. Some of the important things that they helped with were critical: teaching the mother to read and giving her a safe place to practice her English while the husband was working and while the children were at school and in process of coming to and from classes. Other activities were navigating medical appointments that were necessary for the family to move on and gain their citizenship, and also employment issues. Then there were some activities that were just a sheer pleasure. I've seen pictures of them sledding, of laughing, of them cooking different meals together, sharing their different cuisines, and celebrating birthdays together. Through these acts, all of the women have gotten to know and to love each other. Not long ago, one of these friends had a surgery and was in need herself. And there at her home was the mother of the seven children, folding her laundry, bringing her dinner, and doing all of the things that all friends do for each other in their time of need. The second friend I'd like to tell you about, this quote goes along with it. I am only one, but I am still one. I cannot do everything, but I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do something that I can do. As was mentioned before, the typical family size, I think in one of the readings, the family size for all of our refugees is very different. Oftentimes from some cultures, they're small, but oftentimes they can contain as many as 15 people. And oftentimes they do not arrive all at the same time. This was the case for the next family volunteer. Four of the adult family members had arrived together and were awaiting the arrival of their mother and seven more siblings. Now, finding a house that could accommodate these people was going to be very difficult. And as a housing coordinator, that is kind of a burden that I feel sometimes. You want people to be able to maintain their culture as much as possible so that they don't have that removed from them as well. The other expectation that is different is oftentimes adult children stay with their parents beyond what the United States is used to. So oftentimes we kind of shoo our children away at about 18 or 19. Their children will still live with them, and that is a complete norm and a beautiful thing. So these two expectations made housing this family very difficult. And the family, unfortunately, was split into three different apartments. During this time of getting to know them and attempting to house them in a better arrangement, I'd gotten to know the family quite well and knew that a family volunteer was going to be necessary to help them to be successful and to navigate some of the housing issues that they might have. During this time in my personal life, I was introduced to a woman who had worked at the ELC, the English Language Center, downtown, for a few hours each week, but really wanted to do more. She was the mother of six children, her youngest being in middle school, and having four living out of the home on their own. Her husband had passed away, and she had recently relocated to Boise herself from Alaska. Due to health limitations, she needed to use a wheelchair to get around. It was during this time that the family was all arriving in bits and pieces that I could not get this wonderful ELC volunteer out of my head. She was the perfect volunteer for this family, this large family with this mother. But how could I possibly have her get into volunteer with a mother who lived in two different apartments on the second floor? This is where the city of Boise is the hero. They have been rehabbing homes and making quite a few of them accessible for those with physical limitations. When we filled out the application, we didn't think that there was any way that we were going to be able to get this family into this home as quickly as happened, but we got them in within a year, and now it benefits both the mother, who has a daughter with some health limitations, and it makes this home accessible for this wonderful volunteer who has so much to share with this woman. The way this case has worked out is a testament to me that sometimes we are drawn to the calling of service before everything is set into place. We must be patient with ourselves and our circumstances and wait for things to work out. The feeling that I had that these two ladies were meant to benefit from knowing each other makes me think that even through the extremes and traumas that all of us experience, that there really is a higher process working for our good and that all will be well. The third volunteer, Albert Einstein, said, "Only a life lived for others is worth living. This third volunteer has taken on recently, very recently, the opportunity to help with a woman who is a has a domestic dispute going on. And it was something that was very challenging and at the same time very rewarding for her. These are her words. I have always been interested in others' cultures, world affairs, but when you hear the news of foreign wars or just unsafe conditions and the people that are affected, it has always seemed too far away for us to get involved or to make any difference. The words, think globally, act locally, were originally penned for environmental action, but the same is true for helping people. We have needs right here in our communities. We can do simple things that are hugely appreciated by refugees or starting over here in Boise. These people have left nearly everything they have, homes, family, and friends, to find safety. They take on obstacles that most of us would never encounter, learning a new language, finding a new job, a new culture, learning a whole new way of life. It really does put our own life's challenges into perspective and is extremely rewarding and immediately gratifying to make that journey for them just a little bit easier. And fourth, kind of my own experience, Ralph Waldo Emerson. To laugh often, love much, to win the respect of intelligent persons and the affection of children, to earn the appropriation of honest citizens and endure the betrayal of false friends, to appreciate beauty, to find the best in others, to give of oneself, to leave the world a bit better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, or a redeemed social condition, to have played and laughed with enthusiasm and sung with exultation, to know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived. This is to have succeeded. This quote is a lot to aspire to, and I clearly don't read it saying that I'm there, but I read these words, and I can't help but think every day of the work that I get to do when I go to the IRC. I started my journey with the IRC through my father taking a flight from Miami back home, sitting next to a family that was migrating here. He gave them a business card and told the father to look him up when he got here, which the father did. We really, really enjoyed our friendship with that family, and it really perked my interest in this community and made me realize that you could really open doors and broaden your own horizons and have a lot of fun through volunteering with these families. Listening to the choir sing was actually really like a live concert for me, because oftentimes when I'm signing leases and paperwork in people's homes, there's always videos playing in the background, and while families are discussing or going throughout their daily lives, and I'm sitting there on the couch, I love to sit and watch the videos. Actually, I have no rhythm and I never try to dance with it, but they've caught me and kind of heard me watching them, and I really, really enjoy that part of my job. And I think that I appreciate and honor all of the refugees that have come here to start over and give us the opportunity to do as Ralph Waldo Emerson, to laugh and to love and to help out. And that is just my testament of the work that is done through the IRC and through the refugees. And it sounds like we have a school district employee here too, and through the schools. I really enjoy all the bits and pieces. I'm sure if we did a show of hands, my neighbor who I got to say hello to, Charlotte, said that she had once volunteered with refugees, and I'm sure many of you have. And I'm so grateful for this opportunity to be among you and among friends and people that want to reach out to this community. Thank you.
Well, this is a hard act to follow after my colleagues and especially the singers. But first of all, I'd like to thank everyone for inviting us here. This is a beautiful space. The IRC actually had a retreat a couple years ago, and so we got to experience the gardens, and so much creativity came out of this retreat. So we've had a long association with the church through Christmas adopt-a-family programs in the past, and Mike has been a mentor. I know several of your parishioners have been mentors, so we're not strangers. So anyway, thank you to Mike, who spent many hours herding the cats at the IRC, and I know you've spent many, many hours getting this together. I just wanted to give you a bit of my personal history, because it's kind of a history of the refugee programs in Boise. And I actually started back in the mid-70s through Boise State, had the refugee program, and we worked with basically the boat people from Vietnam. So that's how I got my start in this business. Then I moved to Washington, worked in a community college with more Southeast Asians, Laotians, Cambodians, Iranians who were stuck here after 1979. Then back to Boise in the mid-80s. And as you probably know, the populations we serve are constantly changing due to different hot spots in the world. So the mid-80s was interesting because it was before the Iron Curtain fell, before the fall of the Soviet Union. So we were serving Eastern Europeans mostly, people from Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, Albania. So I'm sure many of you know people who came here at that time. And then I missed the whole Bosnian wave. I was home with kids. But then flash forward to 2008, and as a result of meeting a former IRC person and being at a speech she gave, I just went home to my husband. I wasn't planning on going back to work. I said, I'm really called to come back to this. And this was, and of course now we're serving a whole new group of people. Basically, the people that we serve today, the IRC mainly resettles people from Iraq, people from Burma, and Burma has many different ethnic groups, so it's mostly the Karen ethnic group that we serve. Bhutanese, ethnic Bhutanese that have been in camps in Nepal for 17 to 20 years, and then many, many people from Africa, and most of these countries are Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, Sudan, Eritrea, Somalia, Central African Republic. Then there's Liberians, and there's people from many, many different countries in Africa. And as you can see, there's many languages and religions. We have a few people from Afghanistan and Uzbekistan. There are three agencies in Boise, and so we all kind of receive basically the same people from many of the same countries, but I know Agency for Near Americans, I think, has more Afghanis than we do because they've had a long-time employee that's from Afghanistan. But one thing that has been very different from my previous experience that I came upon at the IRC is that in the last 10 years or so, the people that we've been serving, probably since 2000, there have been different levels of education, and I had never worked with what we call pre-literate people before. When you're working with people from Eastern Europe, most of them were highly educated, spoke several languages. Now we are dealing with a certain number of people that have had no education in their country. They have a spoken tradition, but no written tradition of languages. So along with the pre-literacy comes pre-numeracy, so no concept of numbers. So this is tragic that people are warehoused for 20 years in camps with no educational opportunities. So that's a challenge. But it's wonderful working with Rabiu, because we've worked together for many, many years. So I see people that I remember getting off the plane that couldn't speak a word of English, couldn't read a word of their language, and they are getting their citizenship. And so, I mean, they work so hard. They are models for their children, and they learn enough English to become citizens. So, one thing that none of us mentioned, along with the history of volunteers, is that basically people come to the United States and have 8 months to get on their feet. And when you think of 8 months, that is nothing. I mean, we had an Iraqi ER doctor with perfect English. He gets 8 months. And then at the same time, we had a Burundian single mother of five, pre-literate, pre-numerate. She gets 8 months. And so it is very challenging. So our job, we address the basic needs, food, housing, shelter, medical care, and try to get those all covered. And, you know, it's English, 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 jobs, 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 self-sufficiency. It's all about teach a man to fish. And so it is, it's a scramble for 8 months. But our recent employment statistics, I think it's 91%. We lead the state in our employment statistics. And so 91% of our people are getting employment, staying there, and moving up. So, volunteers. We can use volunteers. One thing that I really thought about for a church group, and we are reaching out to many, many more faith-based communities, because we realize how organized you can be and how willing to help. We have many needs, and I can kind of go into these more one-on-one with you. But one need we have is for people to do bus training. Our refugees are bus dependent, as you can imagine. So we have to house them on, really, transportation drives everything. We have to house them on bus lines, hopefully get them to jobs on bus lines. And it's hard to find people to train them how to ride the buses, because most of us probably haven't ridden the buses, because it's the system here is less than perfect. But they really, I have to give it to Valley Ride. They've been very good with us, and they loan us vans, and they realize how important it is for us to get our people to work. So anyway, there's many things that we can ask you if you're interested. We can look at family mentoring. We always need money, of course. Everybody needs money, donations of gift cards, people on call help to help Danelle. She's like, oh, I've got a family of five tomorrow. I've got to set up an apartment. And setting up apartments is very time consuming. And we have many carts of items that we're shopping at Walmart. And so it's very labor intensive even before they get here. So anyway, it's seemingly endless what we need, but it is doable with all of our community partners. And we just thank you so much for letting us come to your beautiful service. And this is the first time I've ever spoken in front of a church, and you've made it very comfortable and easy. And we have treats from Ishtar Market, which is an Iraqi bakery and restaurant up across from Hillcrest Country Club on Overland. And so he's so cute. He doesn't have any marketing materials, and he dug a business card out of his wallet. So I have one business card, but some wonderful rolled baklava for you to have with your coffee after the service. So anyway, thank you so much. And we are going to go forward with a renewed partnership, hopefully, with the Unitarian Church. So thank you.